In Connecticut, there's been a lot of talk about regionalizing school districts and the effort to make the system more efficient for a number of reasons. Today, we'll try to get a greater understanding of the updated proposals and why some parents and educators are still wary. Welcome. We're glad you're part of the full story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Ropiak. Hope you had a nice weekend. We have a number of guests today, and we'll hear from them in a moment, but we'd also like to hear from you. So if you have comments or questions that you would like our guests to respond to, now is the time to get them in, because I'm sure we're going to get a lot of them today. Our email is tfs@wshu.org. You can also tweet to us. We're on Twitter at FullStoryWSHU, and our voicemail phone number is 833-CALL-TFS. As I said, we do have a number of guests, and we're going to start with State Senator Bob Duff. The senator represents Norwalk and part of Darien, and he's the majority leader in the state Senate. Senator, thanks for being with us today.
Great. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
It's our pleasure. As I mentioned, we've heard so many proposals over the last month or so, three or four of them. What are you proposing? What would you like to see happen?
Well, my proposal, along with Senator Kathy Austin from Sprague, dealt with small school districts. In fact, 50% of the school districts in the state of Connecticut have fewer than 2,000 students. And our bill would simply say that those school districts would have to figure out ways in which to join with another larger school district. And if they can't do that, they'd have to tell the Department of Education why. The reason for that proposal is simple. One is the data shows that, and the studies have shown, that these small school districts don't have the student, we don't have the same expectations we might have in other districts, meaning that they may not have the same opportunities, the same resources of larger school districts. And the school district size in Connecticut that the experts have said is a good size, should be the smallest, is about 2,800, 2,900 students. And on top of it, we find that we spend millions and millions of dollars on these very small school districts. At the same time, while their population is declining, and while in urban districts, those populations are increasing. And there's only so many dollars to put around. And with that is the fact that we have finite dollars. We have school districts where we don't think we're getting the biggest bang for our buck. And we need to make sure that we're increasing our student achievement. And so all those things, to me, says that we should be looking at these very small school districts and figuring out ways in which we can do back office consolidation, have more working, people working together. Nobody's talking about closing schools. Nobody's talking about boards of education losing their local control. Nobody's talking about busing or any of those kinds of things. It's just ways in which we can increase student achievement and save money at the same time.
So would this be mandated? Would the schools have to do this, or would this all be done on a voluntary basis?
Well, actually, let me just give everybody an update. The bill did not advance out of the Education Committee. So at the moment, the bill, my bill, Senator Looney's bill, are effectively dead. The only bill that's alive on the issue right now is the governor's bill, which is a study bill. My bill, again, the one that Senator Austin and I had proposed, said you need to do this, but if you can't do it, you need to tell the Department of Education why you can't do it. Not much of a stick there. But we wanted to start looking at these districts because of the money that they cost us. Let me just give you an example. So like I said, 50% of our school districts in the state of Connecticut have fewer than 2,000 students. And that's very small. We spent a lot of money on redundancy here, and then people wonder why their property taxes are high. But let me just give you an example. And 39 districts in our state have fewer than 500 students. But the town of Andover, and I don't want to pick on towns, but the town of Andover has a population, school population, of 191 kids, and they receive over $2 million of education funding. The town of Ashford has 400 kids. They receive $3.6 million of state money. And I can go on and on with some of these very, very small districts. Willington, population 430, receives $3.5 million. Now, there's communities around us here in Fairfield County that have 4,000 students and receive maybe $500,000 of education cost-sharing formula. So to me, that doesn't seem fair. The city of Norwalk has a population that's increasing, and yet we only, again, have finite dollars. So when we think about ways in which we can spend our tax dollars more effectively and raise student achievement, this, I believe, is the way to go.
So just so I can be clear, your proposal then, what you're saying is it is effectively dead for this session?
Yes. The bill did not advance out of the Education Committee.
Were you surprised at the amount of pushback that the proposals have received?
Yes, I was, because change is hard. I think a lot of folks were more concerned about merging school districts. They were opponents of the issue, and I thought they did a very good job of stirring the pot, of creating fear, of not really being truthful about the intentions of what was proposed, and even really making stuff up. So they got parents very concerned. I mean, even people in surrounding districts here, for where I live in Norwalk, they were very concerned about my bill, and my bill didn't even affect them. And people talk about high taxes. They talk about doing things differently. And yet, when we try to do that, there was quite a bit of pushback. But I think that this conversation needs to keep happening, because as I told people, they were concerned that the 2,000 number would eventually go up to 3,000 or 4,000. And I was very clear, 2,000 was a very, very specific number, because that's where 50% of our school districts are. And there's no need to have a school district with 200 kids that has in one building that has a principal and a superintendent above it. Doesn't make any sense to me.
Senator, I only have you for about another 4 minutes, so I'm just going, if you don't mind, after our last program, we got two or three emails. Some opposed, some in favor. One of them was, it reads like this, very opposed. Just sacrificed everything to move out of the house we owned in Bridgeport, to move to a microscopic fixer-upper so that our kids could have the education worth sacrificing for in Weston. This is a slap to everyone willing to pay these house prices and taxes for the sole purpose of education, which the survey proves is the reason people come here. This proposal would turn towns like this into ghost towns.
Not true. Again, because I think people's imaginations are running away from them a little bit, because nobody is saying that there is closing schools, people are losing local control, that we're forced busing, that we're doing anything of the like. This, and frankly, Weston, while close to 2,000, has about 2,400 students, I believe, would not even be affected by anything I've proposed. But again, in the year of 2019, do we really need to have over 200 school districts in the state that has 3.5 million people? We have this redundancy in this state over and over and over again. For example, in the state of California, they have four police dispatch centers. Now, that's where you call them if you have 911 and they dispatch the police and fire and all that kind of stuff. They have four of them in the entire state of California. The city of Houston, that has a population of 4.5 million compared to our 3.5 million in the entire state of Connecticut, they have one police dispatch center. In Connecticut, we have over 120 police dispatch centers. So again, as we look towards ways to become more efficient, relieve taxpayers of some of the high property tax burdens, figure out ways in which we can be more efficient, but most importantly, figure out ways in which we can achieve better student achievement, these are the conversations we need to have. And we can do it in a way that is respectful, that listens to our local communities, that ensures that there's still local control. But the state spends $5 billion out of our $20 billion budget on municipal assistance, whether it's education or city government help.
Well, Senator,
we need to have those conversations.
So just another quick email from the other side, if you will. This comes from Dave, who writes, "We live in an obsolete environment with 150-plus town systems in a state of 3 million. Regionalization should be looked at. for fire, police, public works, and other areas, in addition to schooling, the historic parochial attitudes and structures of the towns in Connecticut have been and will be an obstacle to making progress in our state. We have to find a way around this, or we will sink with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that these conversations, you know, it's all great to talk about them in theory, and a lot of people will nod their heads until you actually put pen to paper, but this is why these conversations are hard. And you need to have these conversations, but you also need people, especially elected officials, who may be opposed to the idea, but do it in a respectful way, not to fan the flames, not to stir the pot, and not to create a sense of fear amongst parents for absolutely no reason. And we should invite everybody to the conversation, have that conversation, and then figure out a way forward.
Senator, with the 30 seconds that we have remaining, what do you think the odds are that something will take place, will happen in this current legislative session?
I think there's a good chance for a study, a robust kind of a study to happen, whether it talk about how to align bus contracts, how to align other types of back office functions. I think we should be having those conversations. Again, nobody's talking about merging school districts or losing control or anything like that, but I think in ways in which we can figure out how to save money and raise student achievement, we should be doing that.
The Majority Leader of the Connecticut State Senate, State Senator Bob Duff. Thank you, Senator. We appreciate your time today.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
We have three guests joining us now. Patrice McCarthy is the Deputy Director and General Counsel for the Connecticut Association of Boards of Education. Lon Seidman is the Chairman of the Essex Board of Ed. And State Senator Norm Needleman represents Essex. Thank you all for your time today.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Senator Needleman, you came out with a proposal the other day that some have characterized as more moderate. What are you proposing, sir?
Well, nice to be on with you, and I guess I attack this from a slightly different point of view. I am a first selectman in Essex and business owner, and I'm trying to figure out the best possible way to solve some of the state's problems. And I want to say that there are a lot of areas that the state can improve. I certainly agree with Senator Duff. But when it comes to education, I think that that forcing regionalization is probably a tough sell for our residents. And all the facts that he laid out are correct with regard to New York City. You know, the bigger cities have a lot less school boards, but I would also argue that when you look at the bureaucracy that's created, the larger you get, you don't necessarily end up saving money, and I don't necessarily think that in all cases you save the money that is anticipated. So working with the head of our local Board of Ed, who happens to be in the position this year to be the chairman of our what we call our Supervision District Board of Ed, Lon Seidman, we've fashioned something that he's been working on and that our three towns here have been working on for a bunch of years that is certainly another way forward. And I think that it offers a lot of the benefits of regionalization without taking away the autonomy that towns want and expect from local boards of ed.
So, Senator, can you give us some examples, please?
I'm going to turn that over to Lon to some extent, but what I would say is we have come together. We have sort of a unique situation here where we have three independent elementary schools in Essex, Deep River, and Chester, and then a regional junior high and high school. And we have created a fifth school board called the Supervision District that provides a lot of services to the other four boards and to the elementary school, junior high, and high school. What we've been asking for a long time is the ability to expand the purview through a local education agency and provide more services and create more efficiency than we already do. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Lon, but I think that we get a lot of the way there for the small towns with what we're proposing.
Lon, first of all, did I mispronounce your last name?
It is Seidman. That's fine.
It's my apologies. Lon Seidman is the chairman of the Essex Board of Ed. So, Lon, these proposals, are they in any way, do they in any way carry a stick, or is this all carrot?
I think it's carrot. You know, the issues that I think have been plaguing our district is the fact that we've had a very hard time, from a regional perspective, conforming with a state definition that wasn't compatible with how we govern ourselves locally. And one of the things that, you know, through the efforts that Norm has been making and the governor's office has been very helpful with this as well, is to say, why don't we look at the definition of what a school district is differently and allow these communities to design a district that fits what works for them so they can start, you know, regionalizing more services. As Norm indicated, we have that fifth school board, which added a layer of bureaucracy, but it's also a bureaucracy that saved a lot of money over the years. The challenge that we're having, though, is that because we are not an educational agency as a K-12 institution here, there's a lot of things that we can't do together, especially when it comes to special education and a number of other areas, that if a very simple definition change was made, we can start, I think, being a lot more efficient and still giving the towns the kinds of control that they would like to have over their local budgets and schools.
Patrice McCarthy is also with us, the Deputy Director and General Counsel for the Connecticut Association of Boards of Education. Patrice, thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure.
What do you think of the latest proposal?
Well, certainly Governor Lamont's proposal that was released last week really moves us in the right direction because it focuses on looking at the data around opportunities for shared services rather than going to a forced consolidation of districts. And I think when we want to look at educational quality as well as efficiency, that really is the right direction. We know in Connecticut that districts actually have been for many years cooperating and collaborating around a whole variety of services, in some cases with their regional educational service centers providing the coordination, some cases it's district to district, and in some cases it's the school district and the municipality that are sharing, for instance, back office services, finance and human resources departments. So I think the approach of gathering the information and looking at what the best practices are will enable districts to continue and actually expand the areas in which they are collaborating and consolidating.
So do you think that the plans that we first heard about a number of weeks ago, that those proposals are effectively done with? Because at that point, they were talking about mandating, and we kept hearing about the carrot and the stick. And it appears that what we're talking about now is a way to get the districts through incentives, through cost savings, to work together.
I think the approach definitely is focused on that type of collaboration. Districts want to be able to provide and maintain a high-quality education in the most effective and efficient way possible. And I think, as in the case of Region 4, sometimes there are obstacles that exist in statute, so we need to make sure that we remove those. And we also have to recognize that there are 25 districts in Connecticut that currently employ part-time superintendents. So reduced financial commitment, those individuals have vast years of experience, and that really enables them to provide for their students and do so very efficiently.
Senator Needleman, I'd like to bring you back in because someone was mentioning the other day that this seemed an unusual time to pursue a school regionalization plan. And it's an unusual time right now because the state is grappling with so many other problems up in the legislature. You're dealing with the deficit, the pension, tolls. And why tackle this now?
That's an excellent question, and I have to say, one of the broader questions is why would somebody with my background at my age want to jump into the whole conversation here? And the reality is that every opportunity we have to improve the state and the way it delivers services to its residents is an opportunity to solve the broader problems. I absolutely agree that the budget is problem number one. The pensions are part of the budget problem. We're squeezing out present services. And I am deeply concerned. I am from Brooklyn, New York. I know what education was like in the city. And I love the way of life that we have here. I think that people tend to think that bigger is better and that the more you regionalize, the more of a panacea there is. And I don't necessarily agree with that. I think part of our problem in the state is that we have state agencies in some regard that are on or off, black or white. It can be regional or you can't be regionalized. And what I'm suggesting here with Lon and with the governor now, which I think is fabulous, look, the governor and I come from similar backgrounds. We're both business people who ended up in public service. We're just looking to allow people to be creative and to find solutions without a very, very top-down, one-size-fits-all approach. You know, my bar for when is it better to do things on a larger scale is, will we improve the quality of the service we're seeking to deliver, and will we save money? There is no data today to suggest that either one of those goals happen at 10,000 or 20,000 or 30,000 person school districts. Again, there's just nothing out there to say that. I would argue that there's a lot of efficiency in the small towns that the state wishes it could mirror. And my approach is free up the towns to make some decisions for themselves and not be rule-bound by state agencies that say it's our way or the highway.
Senator, I'm just going to hold you there for 1 second because we're a little bit short on time. Patrice, I'd like to bring you back in and have a question for you, and then I'd like to get Lon's response and also the senator's. Connecticut has been batting around the idea of redoing the school system and the districts, I think, for decades now. Why should we think that this time around it's going to be any different? Can I start with you, Patrice, please?
Well, I definitely think that the experience districts have had in coordinating a whole variety of services, joint purchasing, health insurance programs, IT, there are so many examples now that they can point to where they have been able to be efficient and improve the quality of educational services, that I think districts are highly motivated to continue to pursue those options on a voluntary basis and doing what makes sense for their community and their students.
Lon Seidman?
Yeah, well, I think in there's this misperception that somehow, you know, these small towns are perfectly happy paying, you know, these huge amounts of money for their school systems. And I can tell you as a local Board of Ed chairman that we're under constant pressure to find efficiencies. And one of the things that I think Region 4 has been a model for the state is that we have been able to do a lot together, even with the restrictions of the definitions that I spoke about a little bit earlier. So I think if we are able to get this new language through that allows that definition to be expanded, that will certainly help us immediately. But I think it will also lend itself to allowing more districts to work together in ways they couldn't before. We had an issue when we tried to regionalize with the state's definition, where one town would have been paying $500,000 more a year over nothing, just based on how the student costs average out. So I think when you tear away some of these restrictions and some of these roadblocks, and people look at this as a good thing, as a positive thing, as opposed to trying to conform with a very rigid, draconian restriction, I think you're going to start seeing a lot more innovation happening, and we're happy to be of assistance to other districts too.
Senator Needleman, is it different this time around?
I hope so. We've been fighting the battle for a long time. There's no consensus within our towns to regionalize beyond the point that we have. And I would argue, just look one town north of Essex, Deep River, and Chester. There's an ongoing war in the regional school system with Haddam and Killingworth because the Board of Ed, the regional Board of Ed, decided to close a school in a community. Rightly or wrongly, they made that decision, and there are huge problems and resentments and fighting that goes on. I just think that there's something in the DNA of New England that says we're creative, we're smart, we're thoughtful, we have all got the same goal. Let us solve the problems, and give us the flexibility to do that. You know, our Council of Government did a spreadsheet of all the areas where our towns share services in the COG, and the list is multi-page long. We already seek and find ways to do that where it makes sense. And I would argue that we need to make sure that the state agencies provide us with the flexibility to do that. We're ecstatic that the governor has picked up and modified our language and added it and taken this approach, because I think it's much more palatable to the small towns. It doesn't necessarily solve all the education problems in the state, and we're not naive to that. But within the small towns, I think arbitrarily getting towns together to form larger units is not going to save money, nor is it going to improve quality. And it's just not going to do it.
Lon Seidman, what are the parents telling you? Are they concerned?
Well, when we looked at regionalizing before, they were very concerned. I think what parents in this district have been accustomed to over the years is that we have regionalized things where it's made sense, and we've allowed the towns to retain control of the things that didn't make sense to regionalize. And what we think the result of this bill would be is for us to continue working the same way we have been together for the last 70 years with far less restrictions. And once this bill passes, we can start having a conversation in the community and see where things go. But really, this is not a large difference in how we operate. It's just allowing us to do more things more efficiently.
Patrice McCarthy, as someone who knows the Hartford scene, what do you think is going to happen this legislative session? Will anything happen, or will we be looking at something going on in the next year or two?
I really anticipate that the governor's most recent proposal, probably with some modifications, but the establishment of a commission that will gather the data that's important for districts to be able to make these decisions, I think that will go forward. And I think we will see a much greater focus on this issue throughout the state.
Senator Needleman, your final thoughts, please. We have about 30 seconds left.
Just excited about the opportunity here to improve the way we do things and provide more flexibility. And really excited that the governor recognizes that. And I'm in so many ways happy to be able to work with the governor on things like this.
State Senator Norm Needleman represents Essex. Lon Seidman is the chairman of the Essex Board of Education. And Patrice McCarthy is the deputy director and general counsel for the Connecticut Association of the Boards of Education. Patrice, Lon, Senator, thank you. We appreciate your time today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
We're being joined by a number of guests for our segment now. Bill Lawler is with us once again. He's from Wilton and one of those who is instrumental in starting Hands Off Our Schools. It was started right after the first proposal came out. Bill, it's good to have you back again. What do you think about what you're hearing now?
First of all, I appreciate the opportunity to be here. And I think when we were last together, our group had something like a few thousand members. We're up over 10,000 as of the last week or so. And I think that speaks to the energy that's behind what we're doing. I want to speak briefly to this idea that forced regionalization is somehow off the table by virtue of the governor's bill. I think that's incorrect. I'll defer to the legislative expert, Gail Lavielle, I think is up next and will be joining us. But we're not declaring victory. We think it's still on the table. There's a lot of maneuvers, including, for instance, the Lamont's changes have no legal effect. It's not a change to the bill. It's still the bill pending before the Education Committee. And so forced regionalization is still very much on the table. And I think Gail might be able to provide some more insight on other ways forward for it. But I want to speak to, there was a few comments by Senator Duff in the first segment about stirring the pot and fanning the flames. And he almost seemed aghast that folks who disagree with the idea of forced regionalization would come together like we have and oppose it and ask Hartford to be accountable for the ideas it's putting forward. But I believe that the people of Connecticut know what's best for the people of Connecticut. And I think that what we see with this group is an expression of that very sentiment. It's a very core belief that, and we our talking points and the things we've tried to focus on as part of the effort and the page are really simple. It's number one, we want the towns and cities in Connecticut to retain autonomy over their schools, which means accountability for people who run their schools. We think regionalization may be a good idea in some contexts, but it should be a voluntary and not coerced and not forced. And third, I was glad to hear the idea of educational outcomes be discussed here for the first time in the context of these bills, but it's not in the bills. There's no assurance that anything here would enhance educational outcomes anywhere in the state. It seems to me that Hartford has a bit of a credibility problem when it comes to talking about efficiency, because the only time I ever hear them purporting to believe with any heartfelt sentiment about efficiency is when it seems to come at the expense of well-run school districts around the school, around the state. So, you know, our position is pretty straightforward. I think we've done a pretty good job. And, I almost feel bashful being here in a representative capacity. The fact is, this is a true grassroots movement. I'm happy to be joined here by Gwen in the studio. Gwen is one of those people. She's been fantastic. There's 10,000 people doing all sorts of different work at their own pace and when they can. And it's been a great effort.
Gwen, I'm going to get to you in one moment. I want to bring in the state representative. Gail Aviel represents the 143rd District. And as I mentioned before, the district has parts of Wilton, Westport, and Norwalk. Representative, it's a pleasure to have you on the air with us.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
What do you think of the latest proposals?
Well, they have there's something that I think people have tended to forget in looking at the recent revisions by Governor Lamont. Governor Lamont is not a legislator, which means that he can submit suggestions about what he would like to.
I'm sorry, Representative, do we still have you?
Were his suggestions, which were responsive. Yes.
Okay, please continue. Yes, I think your phone was just cutting in
and
out. If you could just stay in one spot, and then we'll keep you on the air.
I have not moved.
Okay.
What I was saying.
I'll tell you what, Representative, we're going to call you back in a moment because your phone is cutting in and out. We're just going to call you right back. We'll put you back on the air in 2 minutes from now. Gwen, I'm just going to turn to you while we reconnect with the representative. You are the founder of Connecticut Parents Union. You are a member of Hands Off Our Schools. What do you think of all the latest proposals?
So the reason why I was very interested in Hands Off Our Schools is because I've been speaking with Hispanic parents, Black parents across the state of Connecticut about this issue. And I have not met one single mom or dad who thinks it's okay to dismantle somebody's quality school for the sake of education. Our mission of the Connecticut Parents Union is to protect the constitutional rights of children. So these children, every single one, whether you're middle class, wealthy, working poor, no job, your children have a right in the state of Connecticut to an education. And no one has the right to choose who gets a quality education and who does not. It makes no fiscal sense to dismantle something that is working. And so with due respect to Senator Duff, I think he's a great guy. His mother's a librarian, so anyone who works with books, I love them, right? With that being said, it was kind of interesting that he says change is hard. Yet I remember in 2017, we just approved over $80 million in bonuses to our state employees. How do you, and again, it could be something I don't know about, but $80 million is a lot of money to get bonuses in a fiscal crisis. And then on top of that, I just read a couple of days ago that our assistant attorney general's appropriations is about to review an 11% pay increase. Most people get 1%, 3%, 5%. We're talking 11% to the tune of $3.3 million. Yet we think it's okay to dismantle efficient small towns. So for me, it's about the children. It will always be about the children. We're not thinking about senior citizens. People are making choices to live in the towns. And on top of that, the last thing I will say is about the punishments. They're talking about carrots and sticks. The Connecticut Parents Union is in the process of suing the state of Connecticut, along with other Hispanic and Black parents in Hartford, because in the magnet schools, because of racial quotas, we are leaving seats empty. So how is that an efficient use of your educational resources that we are turning away children in their own neighborhoods because of the color of their skin? So how dare us, as the state of Connecticut, ask a small town to dismantle their educational systems when we are not using our magnet schools efficiently to capacity?
State Representative Gail Laviel, you're back with us. We rushed. We paid our phone bill, and hopefully everything is okay now.
And I'm on a landline.
Oh, couldn't there we go.
No, I'm in session. That's our problem.
The old-fashioned landline always works best. Anyway, you were saying before, and you know what? If you don't mind, if you could start at the beginning, because you were coming in and out, we'd love to get your comments.
Absolutely. Thank you, and it's great to be here. I'll go back to where we were. That I think with the revisions that we saw last week from Governor Lamont, it is important to remember that governors are not legislators, so they can't actually amend bills themselves. All they can do is say, I would like to see these changes in the bill, but it is absolutely up to the legislature to decide whether it wants to accept those amendments, those proposed amendments. So the bill that is currently before us is still the way it always was. And we will have to see what the language becomes when we're asked to vote on it. The governor's bill is currently in two committees. One is education. I sit on the education committee. We're having a voting meeting today, and we are not voting on that bill. The planning and development committee also has a bill which includes a lot on municipal consolidation and shared services and the sections about the governor's bill which contain the study commission. So it could come out of either one or both or neither of those committees, and it has to happen within a week from now. The thing that I think is most egregious as we look at all of these proposals, because I know Senator Duff spoke only about his own bill, but there were two others. One was Senator Looney's bill, which absolutely did force regionalization all across the state, and the governor's bill, which opened the door to it, shall we say. All of these bills were based on the premise somehow that towns and schools, but we're talking about schools here, school districts do not want to share services ever, and that were the current barriers that exist to prevent that to be let down, that they would not do it on their own. And we have so many examples that contradict that. School districts that have wanted to get together for various reasons, for various back office services, and either couldn't because the cost was too high, and also that couldn't because of the structure of collective bargaining agreements. Those are things that the state could do something about. And I think rather than having a bill that says, okay, we're going to study what you could be doing, it would be much more helpful to say, hey, look, we can reform binding arbitration, and then you can do all the consolidation you'd like to do of the things that don't have anything to do with education. Now that the governor has proposed perhaps just cutting back to do a study commission, I'm not sure why we even need a bill and why we need to fund yet another consolidation study, another service sharing study.
Representative, we have gotten a number of emails and tweets. I'd like to read one to you, if you don't mind. Craig,
sure.
Craig writes, regionalization of school districts in Connecticut is a good common sense approach to reduce property taxes. The way things are going, people are being taxed out of the state. Something has to be done to make Connecticut an affordable place to live. Thank you, Craig. Representative?
I don't see how in the world that would reduce property taxes. On the contrary, all of the studies that I've gotten from the Education Commission on the States, which is a nonpartisan national organization, the Hartford Foundation for Public Giving, have shown that regionalization does not actually reduce costs in the majority of cases when it's been conducted. Also, if you happen to consolidate a school district that is not doing well with one that is, that is spreading property taxes around to a point where they'll probably not help the one that's not doing very well too much and probably harm the one that is. And remember that as soon as property taxes go out of the boundaries of your town, the only way that the town can make up the money that it's lost is to raise your property taxes. So I don't believe that that argument holds water at all.
Representative Bill Lawler is with us from Hands Off Our Schools.
I think I've been promoted. Or demoted. Sorry, did I cut you off?
Go ahead, Bill.
Thank you. I appreciate that. You know, a few quick points. Gail, Representative Laviella, has touched upon the idea of a study, which I think under the current iteration would go over the course of 2 years or so. That would really amount to a dark cloud over the state while it's pending. Certainly people who are buying houses, looking to expand their businesses or grow their businesses or hire employees, know that that is a specter that would be out there. I think it's a mistake to consider it. Regionalization has been studied in innumerable ways. There's testimony to this effect in Hartford. It's never been shown. In fact, it's been shown to be less efficient and not improve educational outcomes. You know, and I think that, you know, at the core sort of the this hands off our schools message is something I think that's very important. What I ask Senator Duff and other representatives in Hartford to do is to listen to this. They wanted a conversation. Well, they're getting a conversation. And I'll give you, for instance, that on a March Friday night or Friday afternoon in March, it was a snowy day. More than 3,000 people had submitted written testimony in opposition to forced regionalization, and those are the parameters. Over 200 people signed up to testify, and they stayed till 11 o'clock. Many people stayed till 10, 11 with their kids, not with their kids, on a Friday night in Hartford. And I was one of the last to go, and I respectfully asked the panel to, or the committee to, provide us with another date at a time that might work better. They didn't do that. I understand there may be reasons for that. But if Hartford wanted a conversation about forced regionalization, it's getting one. And it's hearing from the people overwhelmingly with unanimity that this is a bad idea. And it's even if it's something to be considered in some respect, the way they're rolling it out and the way that it's gone about is not the right way to do it. And so the people are being heard. And I think that's a perfectly good thing for governance and for the way things ought to be run in Hartford. One last thing. You know, I think that this opposition group and the opposition to forced regionalization is not going anywhere. I think that the idea that it's dead is wrong. Most people I've spoken with over the last week or so are in tune. They're on message. They know that this is something we have to stay vigilant about. The group is growing. And my personal view is that it's not going to go anywhere until any measure like this is off the table.
Gwen Samuel.
Yep, and I think one positive thing that has occurred, whereas the private sector, your average voter, taxpayer, are now asking questions, right? There is no longer we're going to blindly trust the candidate because this is such a big issue. I'm wondering why wasn't it on the campaign trail? We're about to go into 2020. People are literally preparing their campaigns for 2020.
Yeah, but you were talking about this past November when the Bob Stefanowski and Ed Lamont were running for governor along with Oz Griebel. How come they weren't focusing in on that more?
Yes, and to me that is being disingenuous to the people of Connecticut. I believe they underestimated the people of Connecticut. They underestimated our knowledge about the process. And the good thing about this is everyone is asking questions. So I believe November coming up, people are going to get, especially those running for office, are going to get a rude awakening. If you're willing to put children at risk, if you're not willing to listen to the people, and one legislator said, well, I think it was Harris, Jonathan Harris, he said to one legislator from Durham, well, you are doing the will of the people, you know, you're here. Well, no, she brought the message back from the people. She wasn't speaking on behalf of the people. She took the message from the people to the legislator. I think we have a confusion about your role as an elected official, and they will learn the role come November 2020.
Representative Laviella, with the 30 seconds we have left, how do you think this goes for the remainder of this legislative session? Will anything take place?
Oh, I think we have to watch it very carefully because the classic case of things coming back in the implementer bill at the very end of session is always there. I do think that there was a big push at the beginning of the session to force regionalization, frankly. And I know there has been some pullback, but I really, it is never over in a session until the fat lady sings. And I don't believe that that is in any way inducing fear. I think it's just realism about the way that our legislature works. So we have to watch very closely and read every single piece of legislation that comes before us.
Yogi
Berra will do so without a public hearing.
Yogi Berra is alive and well in Connecticut. Representative Laviel, Bill Lawler, and Patrice McCarthy was with us a little bit earlier, and Gwen Samuel. Thank you all. We appreciate your time today. That's it for our show today. Julie Ferdino is our engineer. Carrie Frank is the digital editor. Our associate producers are Christian Carter, Sabrina Garone, Natalie Chafari. J.D. Allen is the producer, Ann Lopez, the senior producer, and Cherry Sheridan, our news director. I'm Ron Ropiak. Thanks to all of you for being part of The Full Story.